All right, morning. Today's daf in Yuma is daf Pei. 80th page of the Masechta. Appreciate the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. The learning that we do with Zecher Nishmas, Lois Zaltzman Lupin. The Gemara is a continuation of the discussion that we had yesterday regarding Shiurim. On Yom Kippur, there's a prohibition of eating. But unlike regular prohibitions regarding eating, where the shear is usually kazayis, it's a halach l'moshe misinai, but when it comes to Yom Kippur, the shear is going to be a kosevis. And not just a kosevis, but a kosevis hagasa. It's a date. It's a large date. How big is a large date? So that's a good question. That's going to be the topic of today's daf. We're back on Ayin Tesem at Aleph, but truth of the matter is that we're starting right now, from the point that we're starting today's daf, till the end of really today's daf, the end of Pei Amud Beis, it's really going to be one question that's going to be asked and attempted to be resolved, and then how big is a kosevis? So first of all, why the difference? Why, when it comes to eating on Yom Kippur, is it not the regular shear of a kazayis? So that we've said already a number of times, but to reiterate and just introduce today's daf, so the reason why it's different on Yom Kippur is because the Torah never says lo sochal. When the Torah usually frames the prohibition of achila, of eating, so the Torah usually frames it in the form of achila, don't eat. Torah says regarding chalev, regarding nevela, regarding chametz, meaning you're bas b'chalev. Well, actually, no, not by bas b'chalev. Bas b'chalev is another one of those unusual circumstances where the Torah doesn't say don't eat. In fact, yesterday's parsha, if you were listening at the end of yesterday's parsha in Mishpatim, the Torah says lo sevash al gedi b'chalev imo. Okay, but generally speaking, when it comes to the Yisra Achila, the Torah says don't eat, and we know it's a halach l'moshe misinai, so that's code. What is that code for? It means a kazayis, that's a shir of a kazayis. But on Yom Kippur, the Torah says, v'inisam es nafsho seichem, that we have to afflict ourselves, and so therefore on Yom Kippur, the amount of food that we eat that's prohibited to eat on Yom Kippur is the amount that creates inui. Let's say it better. Right. Correct. Generally speaking, the abstention of eating is what creates the inui. So any amount of eating that takes away the inui, and the term that we're going to use a number of times over the course of today is yishuv hadas, right? Yisivi daite is the Gemara's terminology. Anything that basically calms you down, in other words, takes away that biting hunger, so that's going to be considered the iser in the Torah. So how much is it? So as the Gemara is going to record over the course of today's daf a couple of times, the Chachamim did a number of testing, and they arrived at the conclusion, kosevis hagasa, that of a plump date. Gemara raised a question yesterday. When we say plump date, that's mentioned in the Mishnah, kosevis hagasa, do we mean with or without the pit? Meaning the volume of just the flesh of the date, or is it the volume of the flesh of the date together with the pit? That was the Gemara's question yesterday. At least that was Rav Papa's question. Is we pointed out yesterday, it's a little bit difficult because you go all the way back to the Mishnah, a 9 Gimel. The Mishnah really gives the impression that it's with together with the date. That's a simple reading of the Mishnah. Rashi, we did the Rashi yesterday. Rashi says you could somehow get around that. You could read the Mishnah differently. But anyway, that was Rav Papa's question. Although, as the Gemara pointed out, Rav Ashi was not bothered by that at all. Rav Ashi says the words kosevis agasa, a plump date, means the flesh together with the date itself. That was the Gemara's resolution. Okay, but to start us off for today's daf, and really this is one big topic for that we're going to be covering over the course of today, the question is on the tables of following. How big is a kosevis agasa? So again, we know what it literally means. We know it means a plump date. But there were varying sizes of dates. So what kind of date are we talking about? So let's say in relative to Shirim that we do know. We know kazayis. Okay? Kazayis is a volume of an olive. Now, as the Gemara tells us, so we're going to see over the course of today, olives also could vary in sizes. There are big olives, there are small olives, there are medium-sized olives. So, without being too specific and without converting it into modern terminology, so we're going to assume, because it's the Mishnah Kalim says so, that's a medium-sized olive. When we say kizayis, the amount of an olive, we mean a medium-sized olive. So that's going to be our point of relativity. We're always going to speak relative to the olive. So the kosevis hagasa, larger than a mid-sized olive, smaller than a mid-sized olive, same as a mid-sized olive, that's going to be our discussion over the course of today. There's one other shear that we do know in halacha, and that's a kebetza.
Huh?
It's got to be bigger. Okay. So wait. Okay. I mean, you're right. But that the Just let's get a couple of more pieces of information. One of the pieces of information that we all need to know is that the shear of a kibbetza. In halacha, on occasion, the shear demands that we have a bigger shear of food, and that's by the size of a kibbetza. Notably, and most popularly, when do we need the shear of a kibbetza? That's in the world of tumas ochlin. Food susceptibility to tumma. How much food do I need when it comes to tumma? So the answer is more than a kezayis, I need a kibbetza. There's a basic machlokas amongst the Rishonim. It comes up in today's daf, the Rishonim. Tosfos Rishonim has a discussion. When we talk about food susceptibility to tumma, we're talking about receiving tumma or transmitting tumma. But right, that's beyond the scope of today's daf. We're just talking in terms of tumas ochlin. In terms of tumas ochlin, I need more food. The halacha demands that it has to be larger than a kezayis, and how much does it have to be? The shear of a kibbetza. Okay, now an egg, and again we're talking about a regular size egg, chicken egg. That is the Gemara later on will suggest maybe we're talking about a hummingbird egg, maybe an ostrich egg. The Gemara says no, we're talking about the regular mid-sized chicken egg. Fine. We know for sure the chicken egg is larger than a kezayis. That we know for sure. So in other words, in our worlds of where our starting point of the discussion is, we have the volume of an olive, which is a kezayis. We have the volume of an egg, which is larger, which that is of a kibbetza. And now what we have to do is we have to somehow fit in the kosevas agasa. Meaning eating on Yom Kippur, the liability only comes about when you eat it kosevas agasa. So where does it fit in vis-a-vis kezayis? Vis-a-vis kibbetza. Now, Phil's right. It's going to be bigger than a kezayis. That goes without saying. And you'll see why it goes without saying. Meaning, well, we're going to cite Mishnah later on this morning where it goes without saying. But basically now, where does it fit in to the two volume sizes that we know? Where does it fit in relative to the kezayis? Where does it fit in relative to the kibbetza? That's today's daf. I say all that by way of introduction. There are going to basically be, over the course of today, two opinions. When all said and done, when we distill the entire daf today, really there are two opinions. So this is now what we'll call opinion number one. We're in Ayin Tes Amud Aleph, we're right in the middle of the Amud. It's a short Amud, and we're starting with the words Amar Rabba Amar Rav Yehuda. Rabba quotes in the Amar Rav Yehuda, Kosevas Agasa Shamru, Yisera Mikabetza. So we'll call this opinion number one. Opinion number one, a kosevas agasa, the day that one is prohibited from eating on Yom Kippur, is greater than that of an egg. How do I arrive at that conclusion? Before the question, and the Chachamim simply have concluded, they've established that when you eat this much, you are now no longer afflicted from eating. The pangs of hunger now have ended. It provides yishuv hadas, you're now satisfied. Okay. Meisvei. Okay, a number of challenges to this, the position of Rav Yehuda. So Meisvei, the Gemara challenges based on a mission in Sukkah. This is the end of the second parak of Sukkah. This is going to be our next Masechta. So the truth of the matter is that we're going to see this mission together in a short month from today. Meisvei, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai l'tumas hatavshil. So they gave Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai the opportunity to taste the dish. And they gave Rabbi Gamliel, who was a nasi, two dates and a jug of water. And he said, let's do the following. Let's take it, let's bring it up to the sukkah, to eat in the sukkah. Now, so far so good. It's sukkahs. There's a requirement on sukkah to eat in the sukkah. Here he had a couple of dates, a pitcher of water, and Rabbi Gamliel's statement was, let's bring it up to the sukkah. And the Braisa then comments, Lo mimnei shalacha kach, el sheratz lachmel al atzman. It's not because that's the halacha, but it's simply because he wanted to be machmir upon himself. In other words, you don't have to eat that in the sukkah, for reasons which we're about to explore. You don't have to eat in the sukkah, but sukkah, nice to eat in the sukkah, even though it's not according to the strict letter of the law, but he wanted to go lifnim mirushas adin, above and beyond the letter of the law. Uchish anasna lele Rabbi Tzadok. So when they gave it to Rabbi Tzadok, ochel pachos mikabetza, he ate the amount of less than a kibbetza, not lubemapa, he didn't wash his hands, he held it in a napkin, and he ate it outside the sukkah, and he make any bench afterwards. Rabbi Tzadok was, as Rashi points out, he helped himself to three kulas. Kula number one is that he didn't wash his hands first. Kula number two, he ate it outside the sukkah. And kula number three, he didn't bench afterwards. Okay, but leave Rabbi Tzadok alone for now. That's when we come back to sukkah, we're going to explain. Now, hakebeitza by sukkah. Now, there were two dates that were eaten, and what did Rabbi Gamliel say? Rabbi Gamliel says, let's bring it to the sukkah. But then the Gemara commented immediately afterwards and said, he didn't have to. It wasn't an absolute requirement. He did it to go above the letter of the law. Now, the top of Ayin Tesam and Beis, the Gemara comments, hakebeitza by sukkah. Now, we know what's the letter of the law. The letter of the law demands that if you're eating a kebeitza, if you're eating the volume of a egg, so that has to be eaten in the sukkah. Now, the Isaac, Adacha, Kosevas, Akasa, Sharma, Yusser, Mikabeitza. So the Gemara says, now let's think this through. Now, in this case, not to be too confused, but he actually ate dates. Meaning, we're trying to find out what is the volume of a date. And let's assume that when we say the volume of a date, we mean the volume of a date together with its pit. Okay? Even though the Gemara raised that as a question yesterday, let's put that question away. Let's assume that we're talking about the volume of a date together with a pit. And here's what bothers now the Gemara. He ate two dates. Now, obviously, he didn't eat the pit. Okay, it's inedible. But he ate two dates, and the Braisa says he wasn't strictly required to bring it up to the sukkah, but he did so because he went above the letter of the law. And the Gemara's argument now goes like this. Isaka Dadcha, top of Ayin Testament base. If you think, Kosevas Agasa, Sharm Yisrael Mikabetza, that the Kosevas Agasa, a date plus its pit, is greater than an egg, so then it doesn't make any sense. He, Rabbi Gamliel, ate two dates. Now again, just the flesh, not the pit. But if one date plus pit is greater than a kabetza, two dates, even minus the pits, it's got to be at least the size of a kabetza. Okay, that's the Gemara's question. And this is difficult now for the position of Rav Yehuda, because Rav Yehuda wanted to argue that the shear of a kosevis with its date is greater than a kebetza. So the Gemara this obviously bothers the Gemara. So Shekos Ablogar in Lohava kebetza. Kosevis Hagasa Vegaranessa Mihava Yaser Kosevis Hagasa Vegaranessa Mihava Yaser Mi kebetza. Okay, so this is the question. I'm Rav Yirmiya in. So Rav Yirmiya's answer is a very simple, that is correct. Meaning, it is a little bit of a mathematical dilemma, but the Gemara comes up with a solution to this dilemma. Yes, two dates is less than a kebetza, meaning two dates minus the pits is less than a kebetza, despite the fact that one date plus the pit is greater than a kebetza. Shtei kosevas below garnisa lo have a kebetza. Kosevas agas of a garnisa have yisera mi kebetza. The Gemara says that it sounds a little bit perplexing, but it's in fact so. Now, just to explain this a little bit better, meaning essentially, what is Rav Yirmiya saying? The pit's really big. Meaning, if we were to put side by side a date, in other words, let's take one date, and we separated the flesh from the pit, what we would find, says Rav Yirmiya, is that the pit is going to be more volume than the actual flesh itself. So, what he's arguing is that one date, together with its pit, is going to be greater than a kebetza, but if I took two dates, remove the two pits, and only ate the flesh, that would be less than a kebetza, because ratio is not, it's not a one-to-one ratio between date and pit, it's greater. The Gemara doesn't give actual amounts, but the pit is actually greater. And the Gemara says, Hainu Dami Inshi, and now Rav Papa says, now, you walk through the market, you walk through Machane Yehuda, and you're going to hear people say this. Now, I haven't heard people say this, but you're going to hear people say this, and you'll now understand. Trei kabe de tamare, chad kaba de kashisa v'striach. Let's say you go to the store and you buy yourself two kav, it's a measurement, it's the volume. You buy two kav of dates, okay, when you come home. So, how much pit are you going to have? You're going to have more than a kav of pit, because the actual pit occupies, in total volume, in respect to the actual flesh of the date, a greater amount than the date. Meaning, in each date, you have more pit than date. So when all said and done, you go home, and you say to yourself, look at all these wonderful dates. Sacha kol, total, how much dates do I have? Less than half of the total. Okay.
You learn that the actual pit counts as part of the shear.
Yeah, correct, meaning... Correct. That's right. What right now in defense of Rav Yehuda, in terms of how much to eat on Yom Kippur in order to be chayev, so you have to eat one koseves, which he's arguing is greater than a kibetza. Fine. And the volume of that, meaning the flesh and together with the pit. In terms of the story of Gamliel, where the Gemara says he ate 2 dates and he didn't have to take it up, answers the Gemara is because it was without the pit, and that equals 2 dates minus the pits is less than a kibetza. Even though 1 date together with its pit is greater than a beitza. That is answer number one. The Gemara is going to give a second answer to defend Rav Yehuda, and a really simple answer. One that's, oddly enough, the Gemara didn't think of it at first. Which the Gemara says, another answer, Amar Rav Papa Haina Damri Ishi, sorry, I read that. Rav Amar Hasam Haina Tamim Mishum Davalo Pere, Upere Lo Baisuka. Another answer, and it's really simple, and it's really straightforward, and that is, we're talking about fruit. Fruit in the sukkah. Now, on sukkahs, is it good to eat fruit in the sukkah? Good, yeah, of course. It's good to eat everything in the sukkah. But we're talking about the strict letter of the law. What is required to eat in the sukkah? Right? The Torah says, sukkahs teshu shivas yamim, that anytime that you're eating a permanent meal, you have to eat in the sukkah. Well, what exactly does that mean? So now what the Gemara is arguing is, well, let's say 2 dates is a lot. Let's say that the flesh of 2 dates is a lot. So what? It's fruit. Fruit you're not required to eat in the sukkah. That's all the braisa means when the braisa says, according to the strict letter of the law, he doesn't have to do it, because it's fruit. The Gemara says, are you right? And the Gemara challenges based on the braisa. And the braisa quotes Rebbe. And Rebbe says, we were by Rav Elazar ben Shemua. And we ate figs, and we ate grapes, and we ate them achilas arai. We snacked on them outside the sukkah. Now, achilas arai in, achilas kevalah. The Gemara makes a very simple diuk. We snacked on them outside the sukkah. But if we were sitting down to a nice fruit salad, a fruit meal, whatever that means, meaning, maybe over here, achilas kevalah just simply means amount, and it means volume. But if we were to be serious about our fruit eating, we would have had to have eaten in the sukkah. And so what are you telling me? You're telling me that there's no requirement to eat fruit outside the sukkah? Sounds like from this episode there is a requirement. So Ema achalnum ke'achil asarai chutz sukkah. So one possibility is that we ate it ke'achil asarai, meaning just like we were allowed to snack with bread outside the sukkah, so too are we allowed to snack with fruit regardless of amount outside the sukkah. That's one possibility. You might say, "Ma'achanu achilas keva, va'achanu pas achilas arai ba'adai chutz sukkah." Another possibility is that what's meant is that we ate it outside the sukkah together with some bread. But the bread, how come we didn't eat the bread in the sukkah? Because achilas arai, because we were just snacking on the bread. So again, the Gemara is defensive now of the position that fruit doesn't have to be in the sukkah. Look at the following braisa. The braisa says that if I am mashlim, meaning, just a little bit of background over here to get us into this braisa, how many meals do you have to eat in the sukkah? Answer, really? One. Right, just in the first night of sukkahs. Based on Gzeira Shava, Tesvav, Tesvav, from Pesach. Truth of the matter is that there's only one meal, I know, in Galus, and we have 2 days of Yantiv, second night as well. But in other words, but mi'ikar adin, according to strict letter of the law, there's only one meal that we have to have inside the sukkah. Otherwise, you want to spend the rest of the sukkahs outside, eating outside the sukkah, by eating fruit and meat and other things, that's fine. However, in the Gemara and Sukkah, in the second parak, we're going to learn together, really a short month from today, we're going to learn together that there's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that one must eat a total of 40 meals in the sukkah. Meaning there are 7 days of sukkahs. Shemini Atzeres, obviously, it's its own yantiv. There's no obligation to eat in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres. In Chutz Laaretz, it's a different story. We will see that together in the Gemara and Sukkah. But but Rabbi Eliezer says that every day of sukkah, you have to have 2 meals in the sukkah. You have to have bread at every meal. That's what the Braisa here is dealing with. And the Braisa says, no, you don't have to have bread at every meal. If you eat mine targima, that counts. So in other words, of the 14 meals that you eat in the sukkah, so some of them can be not bread, but mine targima. I know the million-dollar question is, what is mine targima? Rashi over here gives a one-word description of what it is. Rashi over here says, liftan. It's a discussion. You could take a look at Tosus over here. Tosus also has a discussion of what mine targima is. But let's just deal with the Gemara's basic point. Back to the Gemara. Peire ba'u sukkah, lisne peiros. So the Gemara says now, if fruit qualifies as I need to eat my fruit in the sukkah, so why did the Braisa say mine targima? Meaning the Braisa obviously is interested in teaching us the biggest chiddush. Wouldn't it be a tremendous chiddush to say, you know, I know Rabbi Eliezer requires us to have 14 meals in the sukkah, but they don't have to all be bread. They could even be fruit. Right? Wouldn't that be great? The Braisa is telling us a big chiddush. By the Braisa saying mine targima, and I'll tell you what, just for the purposes of our discussion, let's limit the definition of what mine targima is. Let's say it's mizonos. Okay? Just to make our discussion easier. Just to make the point of the Gemara simple. Right? I'm simplifying, but that's fine. So, if mine targima is mizonos, so why doesn't the Braisa say, hey, here's a bigger chiddush? You can even use fruit as one of your 14 meals. That's a bigger chiddush. And the Braisa doesn't say that. And why doesn't the Braisa say that? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because Rav is right. Because fruit doesn't have to be eaten in the sukkah. So the Gemara says, my mine targima peros. So the Gemara deflects. The Gemara says, first of all, maybe, number one, mine targima is fruit. Possibility number one, or another possibility is that when you're living in a community that doesn't have fruit, don't know what that means, but there's such a community, and that's why the Braisa said mine tegima, but hu adin, of course, the same thing would be true regarding fruit as well. Period. Now, we see what the Gemara just did. The Gemara just deflected. And the Gemara just gave two possibilities in terms of, in respect to the fact that maybe fruit does have to be eaten in the sukkah. The Gemara's discussion now has officially ended. We're moving on to another point, a new point. It sounds like from the conclusion of the Gemara that fruit must be eaten in the sukkah. There was a major discussion, debate amongst the Rishonim, whether or not fruit has to be eaten in the sukkah. If all I had was the Gemara and the Gemara's conclusion over here, I would say inconclusive. Meaning the Gemara suggesting now, defending the position that fruit has to be eaten in the sukkah. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch is mekel, he's lenient. He does not require us to have to eat fruit in the sukkah, again, according to the strict letter of the law. Or you want to go above the letter of the law, so then of course you eat everything in the sukkah. But me'ikar adin, the Shulchan Aruch says that fruit does not have to be in the sukkah, but again, the Gemara over here is the beginning of that discussion. Okay, where are we right now? It sounds like we're a little bit all over the place, but right now we just finished our first opinion. Today's daf is dedicated to one issue, and that is, how big is the Kosefas Hagasa? How big is the date, together with its pit? So answer number one, which is given to us by Rav Yehuda, is that it is greater than a kibetza, greater than the volume of an egg. Okay, so in other words, certainly greater than a kezias, like Phil said earlier, certainly greater than a kezias, but even greater than a kibetza. That is opinion number one of the Gemara. The Gemara challenges, based on a number of mishnayos and brisos regarding the eating in the sukkah. The Gemara deflected. Okay, we are now at the point where we have finished opinion number one, and we're moving now to opinion number two. And the rest of today's daf, if you will. Rav Zvid Amar Kosef Hagasa Sha'amru Chaser Mikabetza. So Rav Zvid says, you know where the date fits in? A full date with its pit is greater than a kezias, which will be clear in just a moment, and less than a kibetza. So it fits in the middle. So it's a middle shear that is greater than a kezias, less than a kibetza. So the Gemara says, how does he arrive at that conclusion? Did not. He arrives at that conclusion based on a Mishnah. This is the first Mishnah in Beitza. We're going to see this. Beitza comes up right after Sukkah. Right? Yeah. Right, we're going to go Sukkah, Beitza, then back to Rosh Hashanah. Okay, anyway. So the first Mishnah in Beitza, Beishame Armim, Sor, Bekazayas, Chametz, Bekakoseves. How much Chametz do you need to own on Pesach to violate the Isser of Bal Yerah, Bal Yematzeh? As we learned, we did this in the beginning of Masechta Pesachim. It was day one in Pesachim. Three prohibitions regarding Chametz. You're not allowed to eat Chametz, you're not allowed to benefit from Chametz, and you're not allowed to own Chametz. The Torah prohibits us from owning chametz. How much chametz is going to be under our ownership, and we're going to be violating the Isser in the Torah. So this is subject to a debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says when it comes to Seor, now Seor is a leavening agent. Meaning Seor, for sure, you can't eat and own on Pesach. But Seor is like Chametz plus. It's like, again, to use my wonderful terminology, super Chametz. Seor is not only something which is Chametz, but causes other things to be Chametz as well. So it's super Chametz. So when it comes to the Shear of Seor, it's Kezais. Fine. When it comes to Chametz itself, Kekoseves. Okay, the only other time, there's got to be another, but the only other time that I could think of where the Shear of Koseves comes up in Halacha, comes up in Yom Kippur, and comes up, according to Beis Shammai, in terms of ownership of Chametz on Pesach. Now, the Avinah by my time to Beit Shammai. Now, the obvious question is why? What? Why is there a difference between owning Seor versus owning Chametz? Nichsov Rechman Chametz v'lo by Seor. So the Gemara says because if the Torah wanted to prohibit us from owning both Chametz and Seor, so here the Torah could have just gotten away with saying don't own Chametz on Pesach. V'ana Amina. And our conclusion would have been as follows. Uma chametz shein chimutz akasha also bekazayis. Look, chametz, where although it's chametz is chametz. Okay, I know that sounded really smart. Chametz is chametz, and there the Torah tells us not to own. Soor shechimutz akasha soor, which is super chametz, meaning it's not soor is not only chametz, but it's a leavening agent. It causes other. You put it in dough. And it causes the dough to rise, so it's super chametz, so kol shekein. So how much more so? And the fact that the Torah says don't own chametz, and the Torah says don't own seor, kol shekein, midepagin rachman limda lecha shiur shozeh, lo shikishiur shozeh. So by virtue of the fact that the Torah says don't own chametz, and the Torah says don't own seor, what the Torah is now telling us is they're not the same shiur. They're different shiurim. And now, Seor bekezayis, v'chametz bekakoseves. So the shear of Seor is going to be a smaller shear because again, it's super chametz. So therefore, the shear is going to be a kezayis. And when it comes to actual chametz, the shear is going to be greater. Now, here we go. That is all just the facts on the ground. Beit Shammai says on chametz on Pesach, in terms of the prohibition of ownership, Chametz is the shear of a kosevis, Seor is the shear of a kezayis. And now the Gemara makes the argument. Now what are you going to tell me? That the shear of a kosevis is greater than a kebetza, which was Rav Yehuda's position, but this is now, we're in shita number two of today. We're learning the shita now of Rav Zvid. And Rav Zvid says that the shear of a kosevis is less than a kebetza. And here he's constructing the argument. If you're going to tell me that the shear of a kosevis is greater than a kebetza, michti, Beis Shammai shear de nafish mikazayis kamahandre. Beis Shammai is looking for a shear that's larger than the kezayis. Meaning, we know that it departs, the shear of chametz is departing from a kezayis. It's moving to a shear which is greater than a kezayis. So now we're moving up in shear. What's the next shear we're going to hit? It's got to be a kosevis. Listening kebetza. And if the next shear that we're going to hit is that of a kebetza, meaning if Rav Yehuda is right, that kosevis is greater than a kebetza, so what did you just do? You skipped over kebetza and you moved to kosevis? It's hard to imagine. What I would only imagine, says the Gemara, in supporting Rav Zvid, is that after kezayis, the next shear that you're hitting is a kosevis. And now, what are you going to argue? Well, maybe you can argue that really kosevis and kebetza are the same shear. Gemara says the nisa kebetza. Well, then that's strange. Because then the Mishnah would have told us that the shear is a kebetza. It is a more universally used term than that of kosevis. Again, the only time kosevis is used is in the context of Yom Kippur. And here, this topic of ownership of chametz. So therefore, we're only left to conclude that once we're departing from kezayis and we're moving up in shear, the fact that the next shear up from there is kosevis is telling us two things. Kosevis is not the same as kebetza. Otherwise, we would have used the regular term of kibetza. And two, it's the next one larger than kezias. It's got to be. Because I can't imagine that we're going to skip over kibetza to get to kosevis. It must be that when departing from kezias, the next year above from that is going to be the year of kosevis. Okay. Mimai. The Gemara says the proof is not conclusive. Maybe we'll argue that Kosevas Hagasa is actually greater than a Kibetza. Hastama Kibetza. But we're not talking about Kosevas Hagasa. We're not talking about the oversized Kosevas. We're talking about a regular Kosevas. And maybe that's the shear of a Kibetza. And maybe they're the same. And although the Gemara just 3 lines ago said, we wouldn't have said Kosevas if it's the same as Kibetza. The Gemara is now arguing, maybe it's the same, and maybe they just simply said Kosevas. Okay. In other words, to put it simply, it's not conclusive proof. So again, Rav Zvid says that Kosevas Hagasa is between a Kezias and a Kibetza. So the first argument of the Gemara was, well, I know that because we are in the world of Chametz on Pesach, we know that the shear of ownership is a Kosevas according to Beit Shammai. And now what the Gemara is arguing is, it's got to be between the two. There's no way we would have moved up, skipped Kosevis, and moved right up to Kibetza. The fact that we stopped at Kosevis means that Kosevis was there before Kibetza. And the Gemara's argument is not a conclusive proof. So the Gemara says, okay, that's not conclusive, but this will be. Ad kama mezamnim, this is the seventh parak of Brachos. The Gemara in the seventh parak talks about the mitzvah of benching after you eat. The first Mishnah there discusses how much do you need to eat in order for there to be an obligation to bench. So the shita of Rabbi Meir is that you have to eat a kezias, that's a halacha. You eat a kezias of bread, there's a requirement to bench. And if you eat less than a kezias, there's no requirement to bench. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, the shear is a kebetza, the volume of a egg. Now, b'mai kamiflagi, here we get now to the crux of the proof. What is a machlokas? Says the Gemara. Rabbi Meir sever v'achalta zu achila. V'savata zu shtia. V'achila b'kezayis. Look, the Torah says, v'achalta, v'savata, uveirachta. You eat, you're satiated, and then you bench. The way Rabbi Yehuda breaks down the... Sorry, let me start with Rabbi Meir. The way the Rabbi Meir breaks down the pasuk is achila, v'achalta is a reference to eating, period. V'savata is a reference to drinking, period. The achila b'kezayis. Now, once we are isolating achila, we know that achila in the Torah is kezayis. Rav Yehuda savar v'achalta v'savata. Achila sheish basvia. No, it's not achalta, period. V'savata, period. It's v'achalta v'savata. V'savata is modifying the v'achalta, which means, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that it has to be an achila which satiates you. V'ezezeh Kibetza. How much bread do you need to eat in order to be satiated? The shear of a kibetza. And now that we're here, now let's construct an argument. And the argument is really powerful. Look, the point of satiation is a kibetza. That's Rabbi Huda's understanding of achalta v'savata. Achalta, not period, achalta v'savata. The amount that you eat in order to satiate. So satiation comes at the point of a kibetza. So now the Gemara says, think about it. Hashta. Sorry. The Isaka Datcha Kosevas Hagasa Shamar Yisera Mikabetza. Now, Rav Zvid says once again, if you think Rav Yehuda is right, so watch what just happened. When you eat the volume of an egg, you're satisfied. You're satiated. So Hashta Kibetza Sivui Masba Daita Lomiyasve. Now, on Yom Kippur, all we want to do is get away from Inui. Meaning right now I have had hunger pangs. When am I going to get rid of my hunger pangs? So can you imagine that eating the shear of a kibetza satisfies you? But in terms of getting rid of your hunger pangs, you got to eat more to get rid of your hunger pangs? That makes obviously no sense. The only thing that's logical is that the shear of a kosevis is less than a kibetza. Meaning, I eat the shear of a kosevis, good. My stomach is no longer rumbling. And when I eat the shear of a kibetza, which is larger, now I'm satisfied. It's the only way it makes sense. strong argument. Okay. That's the argument on behalf of Rav Zvid. It's a very strong argument. And so now, Sacha Kol, let's just quickly sum total of what we discussed so far today. We have in the Gemara two basic opinions. We have the Mishnah telling us that you eat a kosefes agasa on Yom Kippur, you're miyasve daita, you have not satiated yourself. You have now taken away the hunger pangs, you are no longer in a state of inui, and you have violated the pasuk in the Torah of Inisa Masnafsha Secha. How much is a kosefes agasa relative to the shirm that we know? We know kezaris, we know kebetza. Where does kosefes agasa fit in? So basically, to summarize, we have two opinions so far that we saw today. One is the shita of Rav Yehuda, that a kosefes agasa is greater than a kebetza. He has a Mishnah in Psukah which kind of speaks to this idea, although really it more challenges him than supports him. That is shita number one. And the shita number two is the opinion of Rav Zvid, where it says no, kosefes agasa fits between kebetza and, I'm sorry, kezayis below it and kebetza above it. And how does he arrive at that conclusion? Really, the Mishnah in Brachos in the seventh perek really supports him the best, because what it says is that when you eat a kebetza, you're satisfied. So when you're eating kosefes agasa, it provides yishev hadas. It's comfort from being hungry. So obviously, comfort from being hungry is going to be less than satiation. So therefore, kosefes agasa is less than a kebetza, greater than a kezayis, but less than a kebetza.
Sure, yes. Why do we differentiate between large and small dates, but we never do that with olives or eggs?
Well, we know there are larger sizes of olives, and we know there are larger sizes of eggs. The Mishnah Kalim, which the Gemara kind of is holding back from, but I mean, it's out there. The Mishnah Kalim is out there. The Gemara is going to quote in just a moment. Mishnah Kalim says average size. When we say eggs, when we say olive, we're talking average size, right? The medium-sized olive, the medium-sized egg. Now, it's interesting because our Mishnah says koseves hagasa, the plump date, and one of the arguments you could have made, which the Gemara kind of touched on it earlier, is maybe there's a differentiation between a plump date and a regular date. Maybe that argument could have been made. The Gemara did suggest that a little bit earlier in defense of Rav Yehuda. Fine. Okay, we are together now on the very bottom, the last three words of Ayin Testament Base. We're about to approach today's daf. Today's daf is daf Pei, Tanya, Rebbe, Omer, Kol Yishrim, Kulam, Bechazayitz, Chutzmi, Tomas, Ochlam, Shishina, Akasa, Bemashma'am, Vishinu, Chachamim, Bishiuran, V'rai, Ladavar, Yom Kippurim. Okay. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa. The Braisa, as it reads, really is unclear. I'll translate the Braisa. But I will not explain the Braisa. The Gemara will do that. So first, let me translate the Braisa. Rebbe says, top of Pei Amud Aleph, all the shirim of Achil in the Torah is a kezayis, meaning their standard shear is a kezayis, except for Tumas Ochlem, susceptibility of food to Tuma, where there it is the size of an egg, it's a kebetza. Shishina Akasav B'mashma'am, because the Torah deviates from the way it presents it to us. The Braisa doesn't explain. The Gemara later will. Vishinu Chachamim B'shiuram. The Chachamim deviated from the regular shear. Again, really unclear what that means. And Raila Davar. And the proof for all this is Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippur is the proof for everything. Okay, that in of itself, if we just had the Braisa by itself, we're just confused. The Braisa is really unclear what's going on over here. We do walk away from the Braisa understanding that the default shear when it comes to food is kezayis, and there are points of deviation, and there's reasons for deviation, but after that, the Braisa is really not clear what we're talking about. So the Gemara now goes on to explain. Maishina kasav b'mashma'a. So the Gemara says, what does that mean that there's a deviation? So melos una, because when it comes to Yom Kippur, the Torah describes, not don't eat on Yom Kippur, but he didn't afflict himself on Yom Kippur. Meaning, if you want to violate Yom Kippur, you stop afflicting yourself. That's what the Torah uses to describe Yom Kippur. And when the Chachamim said, okay, now meaning, now in Yom Kippur, we're moving away from the standard. The standard is kezayis. We're deviating from the standard. So where does the deviation take us? Well, the Chachamim tell us. Meaning, from the Torah itself, we don't know. Chachamim tested, And they come to the realization that the shear is kosefas agasa. When you eat the volume of a date together with its pit, you are now no longer afflicted. Now what does that mean? And the proof is Yom Kippur. What does the Bryce mean by that? Because if I just had that, I would have said Orcha Dekrahu. Meaning, if with the, I just would have simply said, maybe the Torah is moving away from the normal usage of the language, but that doesn't speak to the idea that there's a new shear. Yom Kippur introduces us to this idea that, no, there's a new shear. It's possible that we move away from Kezias. Now, Tumas Ochlem Kebetza Minalan. Now, when it comes to food susceptibility to Tumah, now I told you there's a major machlokus amongst the Rishonim. I mentioned it earlier today. But just simply to reiterate, we know that food is susceptible to Tumah. That we know. We know that food there's an amount of food that you need. The amount of food is a Kebetza. There is, however, a major machlokus amongst the Rishonim. Does that mean for the food to become Tumah? Or does that mean for the food to transmit Tumah to others? That's a major debate amongst the Rishonim. We're not going to get involved in that debate right now. Maybe at a later time. But so that we're all aware. But the Gemara says, how do I know that when it comes to food, the shear is a kebetza? I'm Rabbi Abba, I'm Rabbi Elazar, I'm Akra, Mikol Ochel Asher Yachel. Because the Torah here uses a strange language. Kol Ochel Asher Yachel. Food that's food. Or food that's eaten. What does that mean? So ochel haba machmas ochel. So it means food derived from another food. Meaning we're looking for a food that derives from food. Now when it comes to trees, trees are inedible. So although a tree will produce a fruit, but the tree itself is not edible. So we're looking for something which is edible, producing something which is edible. Answer. Vezeze beitzas tarnegoles. Chicken making an egg. I can eat the chicken, I can eat the egg. So So the Gemara says, okay, but what about a calf? Calf is edible, and what's producing the calf? Mom, which is also edible. Then don't quote me out of context. But so the Gemara says, yeah, but yada shecht it. So that's not, in other words, we're looking for something that pops out, and you can eat it right away. Fe'ema ben pakua, so the Gemara says, okay, but what about my ben pakua, where I shechted the mom, and there was a fetus inside, and the shechita of the mother will be effective for the eating of the fetus. So Tankriya, there the Gemara says it's not readily edible because there's still blood in the fetus. The blood has to be extracted. So there still needs more preparation before you eat it. Mashenkin, when it comes to an egg, the egg pops out, crack the egg and eat it. Ve'ema beit says bar yuchne. The Gemara says there was a large bird. See Rashi for how large a bird we're talking about. But there was a large bird. Maybe we're talking about the egg of a really large bird. Tafas merubalo tafasta. Tafas mua tafasta. The Gemara gives us the age-old rule of that's too big. In other words, when we're looking for a shear, so you can't adopt the largest shear. You look for the smallest shear. The Gemara says the smallest shear. Ve'ema biyasa ditzi parta. I'll call it a hummingbird. Probably not right, but doesn't matter. In other words, the chicken is, you know, there are birds that are smaller than a chicken, laying eggs that are smaller than that of a chicken. So, dezuta tuva, in fact, it's tiny, says the Gemara. Rabbi Abau, didei amra mikol acher sheyachal, ochel shata, ochla bevasachas. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you why it's not the egg of a hummingbird. Because we're looking for a food that is, A, produced from another food, and B, can be eaten in one shot. Meaning, basically, fills up your mouth. V'shir chachamim ein beis ablia machzik yosem mikabeitza tarnagola. And in terms of a swallow is achieved with the volume of one egg. Once again, the chachamim tested, and they looked for the average and the swallow of one egg. Okay.
Why didn't they say food from a food? It's a little different food, not like a gedi from another. It's the same food.
I know. Okay, but the Torah doesn't differentiate. So I mean, you could say that, but okay.
Because we knew the answer was an egg.
Right.
Could answer that.
Right. This could be one of those instances where we knew the answer and it was just a question of how to connect the pasuk to the answer. It could be okay. Amar of Elazar. Let's do a little bit more today. We're certainly going to get to the bottom of the Amma today, maybe even further. But Amar of Elazar. Ha'ochel chelav bezman hazeh tzarich sheyichtov lo shir. God forbid, you eat chalev. Okay, it doesn't happen to us. We're not going to find chalev in the store. Chalev are the forbidden fats of an animal. It's those fats that are around the organs of the animal. When we went back to Chulin, so the Gemara, right? Omentum is the word. When we went back to Chulin, so the Gemara in Chulin discusses in detail which organ, which fats connected to which organ. Some fats are mutter, some fats are aser. Right, you remember we had a discussion like stomach, like the inner fat, the outer fat. Okay, anyway, basic anatomy of animals. But anyway, we sit down and we eat chalev by accident, inadvertently. Now, what we would have to do is we have to bring a carbon. The eating of chalev is an ister kares. If done so b'shogeg, you're chayv a carbon chatas. And let's say by accident, I forget the chalev is aser. Or I didn't know this was chalev. Either way, and I ate it, and now I had a yediyah. I now realize what I did. So now I got to go to the Beis HaMikdash and bring a carbon. We have one small problem. No Beis HaMikdash. So what do I do? So write down, this is Rav Elazar's suggestion. He's an Amora. Write down how much you ate. Okay. Sure. So why? Because Shema Yavo Bezdin Acher V'Yarbe B'Shiurim. Because what's going to happen maybe is that a later Bezdin will come down and say, meaning B'mhera B'Yamina, the Beis HaMikdash will be built, Sanhedrin will convene, they're going to now have a discussion about Shiur, and maybe they'll change the Shiur.
Okay. But at that time you did it.
Okay, your point is excellent. Hold that point of yours. Huh? Okay, so my good. My yarbe.
The penalty, how much you have to eat for each one.
Wait, oh, so we'll see. So my yarbe b'shiurim. So what does that mean? Inam de mechayve carbon akazayis katan. Because look, and this Phil is going to address your question. Look, the Torah tells us that if you eat an amount, you're going to be chayv. Now, what's that amount? So we have a halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Now, the halacha Moshe Mitzinai is kazayis. But even within the halacha Moshe Mitzinai, there is room for there's latitude. Why? Because what's an olive? Meaning, you go to the store, you will find cans of large olives, cans of medium-sized olives, cans of small olives. What is the size of an olive? That's the room of latitude. And maybe what the Sanhedrin will agree to, in other words, again, we all understand kezayis. That's halacha Moshe Mitzinai. But which can in the aisle in the supermarket are we talking about? Which olive? So maybe it's going to be a smaller kezias.
Why don't you use the same thinking of when you say an egg, it's a medium egg. Why don't you just say it's a medium olive?
Right. Regarding the size of the egg, it helps us to know a little bit, like we learned the Mishnah Brachos. It satisfies us. When we're talking about an olive, it's not going to change our sense, our feeling. So it's now up to the hands of the Chachamim to decide which olive, meaning the Chachamim have that power of interpretation. So they're given the power of interpretation, they have to decide which size olive. So now the Gemara says, so maybe what Basin is going to come up is they're going to say, no, not that size, but a smaller size. So the Gemara says, well, now wait a second. And now we get to Ben's point. So the Gemara says, yeah, but when the time when you ate it, it was not the small size. It was a medium size.
You had a verdict right there.
Right. So in other words, I knew when I learned my mistake, I work with what I know then. Not what a later Beis Din is going to interpret. Meaning if the later Beis Din interprets, fine. That only will be true from that point going forward. It won't redefine what the shear was in the past. So the Gemara says, well, maybe you know what's going to happen. When maybe a later Beis Din will come, they'll reinterpret Kazayas. Maybe it'll be a larger shear. And then what's going to happen now is you'll get saved. You'll get saved from eating carbon. The Gemara says, just give me a moment. So the Gemara says, you know, let's go back to that first pshat, which we ended up rejecting, but let's go back up to that first pshat. Textually speaking, that first pshat wasn't good. Because it says, maybe they're going to increase the shear. And what do we suggest? maybe they're going to make it a smaller shear. What? What are you talking about? The statement was Shema Yarbe Bishurim. Shema Yarbe Bekarbanos Mach Meshiurim. Well, maybe what they're going to do is, by diminishing the shear, they're going to increase the amount of carbon chatuses that are need to be brought. Okay. Gemara says, fine. So what we have now is Rav Elazar's suggestion that if we chaylev write it down, because maybe Basin will change the shear of a kezayis. And it sounds like from the Gemara that will be effective not only for that point going forward, but also retroactive to all the people who ate. Which is difficult to understand because I understand they could reinterpret going forward, but how they reinterpret going backwards, it's difficult to understand, but the Gemara suggests it.
The one person in amount that for that at that moment required him to bring korban. He's already said with the korban.
Right.
Well, how could they go back and say, no, you don't
And I don't have an answer for you. I'll start there. But Rashi says that once they reinterpret, and let's go with the Gemara's conclusion, which is they reinterpret it to a larger kezayis. If you brought a carbon for what you ate, it's not a carbon. And Rashi goes even further. Rashi says, and you know what you did? You just brought chulin into the azara. In other words, your carbon doesn't even qualify as a carbon. It's to that extent where their reinterpretation now will change your liability.
Why not then Hashem tell it?
In other words, it's, I'm admitting it's a strange thing.
You're talking about when the third best language will come.
Yes.
So wait, then there'll be chata shemesh abala.
Well, let's assume I think he's suggesting in your lifetime that it's going to be built.
Because I mean, once somebody dies,
correct. All right, let's get to the two dots and we'll stop for today. I'm Rav Yochanan Shir and Velenshin Alcha Moshe Misinai. Rav Yochanan makes a statement that Shir and Onesh are Halacha Moshe Misinai. Which means not in the Torah. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? Onsha Michsav Tzivi. The Onish is mentioned in the Torah. So Allahachi Kamar. Shiurim Shel Onshin Halacha Moshe Misinai. That's what was meant by Rabbi Yochanan. That in terms of the punishment, that's written in the Torah. In terms of how much to eat to receive that punishment, that's Halacha Moshe Misinai. Tayinami Hachi, the Gemara quotes a brisa that says this as well. Shirim Shel Onshin Halacha Moshe Misinai. Acherim Omer Beistina Shel Yaivetz Tiknum. The Beis Din of Yaivetz was the one who instituted it. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? No one's going to come and tell us and tell us new laws in the Torah. That doesn't work that way. Not even a Navi can come along and say, you know, I had prophecy, and through my prophecy, a new law was taught us. It doesn't work that way. Ain't a Navi yachol lechadesh davar. So the Gemara says, Elam Ela Shichem V'Chasim V'Yazdim. So the Gemara says, no. This was part of Halacha Moshe Misinai. It was taught, and then it was forgotten. We learned at the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, I hope I got the number, yeah, I was going to say that number. Right, at the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, 3,000 halachas were forgotten. At the point of death of Moshe Rabbeinu. So there was Torah that was lost. So the Gemara says, this could be one of them. And so when we say that it was instituted by Yaivetz, by the way, Rashi points out Asnil ben Kenaz, right? One of the early Shoftim. So Yaivetz brought it back. So so what the Gemara is suggesting is that no, he didn't innovate, he didn't invent, right? It was he recreated. He put it back together again. He put the puzzle back together again. Okay, we'll stop over here. Summarizing today's daf is easy. Today's daf, it's funny. As a daf, I would say it's a little bit complicated. In terms of a summary statement, I think it's pretty easy. Kosevas Agasa, how much is it? The Kosevas Agasa? So, we have basically two opinions for today. Rav Yehuda's position is that it's greater than a kibetza. Certainly greater than a kezayis, greater than a kibetza. The position of Rav Zvid is it's between a kezayis and a kibetza. The Rambam takes the position that of Rav Zvid. It's between a kezayis and a kibetza. The Mishnah and Brachos really supports that position. And Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of today's daf. Not the end of today's daf, but Ad Kan.